Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal, $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
What Came Next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening. As shared in part one of his updates, John Michael Lander is a former Olympic-bound diver, actor, author, speaker, and advocate. His words and efforts have been seen everywhere, from Time magazine to the TED Talk stage. He has entitled his experiences of sexual abuse and trafficking, An Athlete's Silence. By sharing his story on What Came Next, episode 22, and elsewhere, his goal is to bring awareness to predatory practices in the athletic and education worlds, as well as to change the way society receives sexual abuse victims. I am so honored he joined me again today to discuss updates in his journey. He also had the beautiful idea of flipping the script and host swapping for the second part of the next two episodes. The Broken Cycle Media team deeply appreciates John Michael's time, dedication to his advocacy, and the creativity he brings to these episodes.
I just wanted to share with you, I'm still working with SurvivorSpace.org, where I got the chance to have you on my little thing called Talk with John Michael. And I'm just wondering if you'd be interested if we could switch chairs now.
I would love that.
We've been chewing this idea apart for a little while, and I'm so excited. You want to guest host for a bit now?
I would love to guest host. Well, first of all, I don't know how much your audience knows about your story, but I think this would be a prime opportunity for you to be able to share what you really want them to hear and know. And then we will go organically from there on our offshoots, which if you listen to the two of us talk, we cover everything.
I think it's the trust and the consent that we've curated for each other. I can't wait to see where this conversation goes. As soon as you said that, my head spun in a direction. So I guess I'll go off on that direction. The audience actually has had a really intimate view of things up to a point. What came next was born from Something Was Wrong to a certain degree. On season 7 of Something Was Wrong, I shared my family story. That was actually the first time I ever shared it. It actually came out right before my book. It was very scary for me. And then we created What Came Next, born from my experiences on Something Was Wrong and what it was like to put myself out in the media. And then what came next after that? We've had a couple episodes on What Came Next about the things that have unfolded since then. I discussed where we ended up in the legal system 10 days after my book came out. I received the first notice of my brother's first parole hearing, which was a huge slap in the face. I only got 9 years in between his sentencing and his first parole hearing because it took 4 years to convict him. It's gutting to think that that's how our justice system works. 85% of a sentence has to be served in California before someone enters the parole system. He had gotten 15 to life. It was 13 years when the hearing happened. At that first parole hearing, he threatened my life. It was shocking. I tried to receive justice for that as a means to keep him in prison longer as those parole hearings loomed. I was trying to report it for a couple years. And then last year in 2023, April again, he received a second life sentence. He got 30 more years for the attempted murder of a correctional officer, which was caught on camera, which was the reason why he was postponing his hearings, because he was waiting for that sentencing. I love to share this part because I think it was the swiftest serving of American justice ever. The DA, I spoke to him 2 weeks before the sentencing, and he said, oh yeah, I can throw on 6 more years for this criminal threat that no one has even heard you report. And he just decided to take me seriously. 2 weeks later, my brother was sentenced. The last sentencing was even in person, so I had to stare at him and be verbally accosted by him. Before I gave my victim impact statement at that hearing in 2023, he said, I accept all these charges except if she makes a statement. If she makes a statement, I take them back. He was also calling me all kinds of names as I made my victim impact statement. This was literally in front of the judge. The judge didn't really care. It was a little bit of a wild situation.
I mention this because the last thing our audience heard or received was,
yay, 36 more years to life, which is a very layered yay, because I would have loved for him to be rehabilitated. But when it became very clear that that was the farthest thing from what he's becoming, it became comfort in knowing he got a longer sentence. The last update I gave, I was just like, my life has changed. And it's true, my life has changed to a certain degree. I have some comfort in knowing he's not going to get out. However, he's still in the parole process. Even with that new sentence a year ago, people don't realize I am still in the parole process. I will have to see his ugly mug and make victim impact statements every time there's a parole hearing. And he does not start serving that second life sentence and those 30 years for that attempted murder until he's paroled for my mom's murder. That could be next year. That could be in 15 years. But if it's in 15 years, I will likely have to make many statements and see him many times in those years. And then I just found out I actually have to see him in 2025 and 2026 because of different parole processes.
As a result of these two new messages letting me know about the parole proceedings in 2025 and 2026, I have reopened my petition on change.org because although I'm not really fearful that he's going to be getting out those next years, I have this immense grief, anxiety, and worry of just having to see him. The last time I had to see him in the courtroom with Tiffany,
He berated me, he yelled at me, verbally abused me, threatened my life more. It's shocking to me that I have to go through these systems so often, despite the additional sentences that he's gotten. As much as he's not going to be paroled outside, that the parole process can even still be an opportunity for him. It's mind-blowing that the victims of these cases and crimes have to go through this just to have some sort of peace of mind. Please consider signing the petition, and if you already have, please, please consider sharing it. Every share and signature helps. Because if he gets paroled for my mom's murder now, then I don't have this ultimate comfort of knowing he'll be in there for the rest of his life. I don't ever want him to be paroled for my mom's murder, to be honest. I will be a part of the parole process as much and as often as I have to be. It's just gutting that I have to be. He's kept tabs on me, so there's stalking. There were continuous criminal efforts against me. I was like, wait, but how? How is there parole still? The parole hearing committee actually heard him threaten me. I felt in danger, and I still feel endangered. I like to highlight, as much as victims can receive solace and healing and points of moving forward, we're also constantly dragged back in the muck. There's always a what's coming next for us. That's the point of what came next, is that the documentaries and the media and the coverage of the perpetrators makes it seem from that perspective that it's done.
I understand that, and that's so important. I'm glad that you shared that. I think what our society, they think that since that person has been prosecuted or is in parole, then everything should be okay for the survivor. What they fail to recognize is that the survivor's job is just beginning to learn how to heal. And that's a whole life experience. The gymnast who were involved with U.S. gymnastics and that doctor that will remain nameless, everyone thought that since he was sentenced, that these girls should be okay now. I don't know how many people know this, that when you are going through such an event with law enforcement, every time they deny your claim, then they pick it back up, and then you go back in and you start from ground zero. And then they compare it to the last file that you had.
It is an inefficiency in the system. Everything is technology-based right now. So why can't something be uploaded into a general system? I've had PTSD in the past. I have been diagnosed with it. I know myself well enough to know that I don't have it right now. I think it's something that does recur for me. When I am thrown into that legal system and I have to see him or I have to hear his abusive words and a judge does not validate that and tell him to stop talking, that is so triggering for me. And I can feel those symptoms spike again when I'm thrown back into that. The system itself is really triggering and damaging at times too when things are not as efficient or victim-centric as they should be, I believe.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
When you decided to share your story, what was the impetus behind it? What was the reasoning you said, I'm going to do this now? Because I think we all have one. Just for example, I remember the day that I walked into the garage and I was going to just end everything. I wrote a note to my partner and my two Boston Terriers. I sat in the car and turned it on. And as I was sitting there, I started to think, this isn't fair. This isn't fair for these people to find me like this. I got up and I went into the living room and I just started crying. It was one of those really ugly cries. In the middle of that cry, I just said, this is it. I'm going to share my story just so that other people can hear it and maybe help them so that they don't have to be on the floor in their living room, you know, twisted knot, trying to figure out what to do next. That's what made me go forward. I had to do it to free myself first and in hope that I was going to help someone else.
I think that's so beautiful that your impetus was to help others and recognize others' needs. In that, I think it speaks to who you are, John Michael, because you are an ethereal, giving source of light for humanity. So that is not shocking. My impetus was a little more selfish. Unfortunately, in the beginning, I was completely and deeply maddened by our system. I started down that path of sharing because I was like, this can't be my reality. I am losing my mind. Other people need to know that this is happening. Because if it's happening to me, it's happening to other people. So it was more of like, this is a travesty, help. That's what I think it was. And I recognized at that point, the media is powerful. I knew the power in saying me too, but I also knew the power it could have over my own personal trajectory in the legal system. I think that's what put me on that track. I have two aunts on my mom's side. My mom was the baby. So there was an older one and a middle one. My middle one became my surrogate mom when my mom was murdered. She became my kid's grandma. She just passed away in December, and it was a huge loss. Meanwhile, the other aunt actually has negated my abuse. I shared about the sexual abuse, everything, and she invalidated it. She didn't believe me, and she supports my brother, wildly enough. I also share that because that was very impactful for me. As much as love and support I've gotten, invalidation and non-support can be really detrimental as well. As soon as my book came out and many other people reach out to me, I thought, oh wait, this is way bigger than me. This is way bigger than just breaking down cycles in my family. The statistic that I found was 1 in 2 American children face sibling abuse at some point in their life. That was mind-blowing for me. That was like, oh, okay, this is for society's healing. Not that I have that much power, but I do believe every single human has unrecognizable potential in making a difference. My mission became much bigger than my own trajectory and my own search for justice. It became about calling something out. As a result, this is something I haven't really shared much about, but the more I share my story, the more I'm learning too. I had a beautiful woman reach out to me and say, I heard your story on Something Was Wrong. I then went and listened to your episodes about your updates. I have a nonprofit organization. This is what the woman said. It is called Parent Real Talk. They discuss, give resources, and spread awareness about child-to-parent violence. And I went, oh, that's a thing? Of course I know that's a thing. I have received messages from people saying me too about that as well. But I didn't know there was a term. And as soon as we have a term, we have a greater understanding. And as soon as we have a greater understanding, we can disseminate that information easier. And then when we disseminate that information, we're changing things because awareness is prevention. If you'd like to learn more about Parent Real Talk and Tabitha Ross Brown's amazing mission in the nonprofit and victim advocacy space, please listen to What Came Next, episode 69, entitled Believed Instead of Blamed. So my impetus has snowballed and evolved, and it still does constantly. Sharing doesn't make me feel safer. I know the more I share, the angrier my brother will probably get. So I actually know to a certain degree I might be adding fuel to the fire. But I've learned through my efforts and the feedback I've gotten that the impact I could make is so much greater than any sense of danger I might feel. I mean, I have children to protect, absolutely, but I couldn't stop trying to change things for them. That means societally I need to protect them too. It's a really interesting place to be, to have to use the media for justice. That was a tool I had to use. I received that 2-week serving of justice by that DA because I emailed him with my media email. So I think that it can be a tool, but the way we share these stories is really important. This is something that I can share. I recorded a new television show recently, which was a whole interesting experience in and of itself. Most of us, we're getting very nominal fees for our time. We can't even be paid for sharing our story in documentaries or podcasts. So we're being paid for our makeup, our time, our travel, things that we are legitimately owed for because we're humans and giving our time for a cause. Every time I do something like that, which I've only done 2 television shows so far, so it's only based on 2 experiences, but whenever I do something like that, the anxiety is huge. Not only just because of doing it and because it requires so much energy and emotional cost, but because I'm thinking, oh my God, did I say that accurately? This new TV show I just filmed, I remember I said, I visited my brother once in jail before he was sentenced, just to plead with him to finally plead guilty. Well, I forgot in that moment that I had actually visited him twice. But so many people have consumed my story now. I'm like, oh my God, are people going to think I'm lying because I forgot that one little detail? These are things that we think about as survivors. I know I'm not alone in that.
Exactly. Or I'm sure you've had this experience where you're in an interview or being taped for something and you have an epiphany where you discover something new that you have not even thought, or something just opened up and it's a whole new experience.
Absolutely. I've actually had people leave comments, oh, she sounds really angry in this interview, or she sounds really sad. Noticing the differences in the way I share or the things I share. I am a human grieving in front of you all. The grief and a loss of a loved one without a murder, just the loss of a mother. If that person was impactful in your life, that'll be forever. You're taking in my live grief right now. So yes, it will be a non-linear path and you will hear things that surprise you because I'm often surprised in this. I will do back-to-back interviews in a day. And I will cry through one of them, the whole thing. And then the second one, I might not, or opposite. That's just the nature of doing this.
Right. We're not robots. I do want to go back. Not only did you lose your mother, but there were some other things that were happening. You shared with me on Talk with John Michael another aspect that people may not know.
Yeah, very limitedly, I have shared about the sexual abuse I faced at the hands of my brother. I chose, interestingly enough, to share more on Something Was Wrong. I shared a bit about that abuse. My book came out after the podcast, but it was completed before. When I was writing my book, I wrote details. I shared a lot about that abuse, but then I chose to cut it out. Not all of it. I left in that it happened, but I did not share the details because putting it in writing for the first time felt so uncomfortable to me. We don't talk about a lot of the nuanced abuse that can happen. So that's why I have stepped into sharing more, because I do believe awareness is prevention and or immense support that people need. Since then, I have shared not really on my platforms as much, but more in interviews that give me the chance to talk about abuse more. I will definitely speak to the mechanisms of my brother sexually abused me, but without touching me. He had basically manipulated me into committing sex acts on myself in front of him. And there is no joy in my sharing that. But I've realized it's really important I share because there are aspects of it I think that other people will learn from and heal from. And I was right because the number of messages I receive specifically about that facet of my abuse is massive. Statistics keep validating my sharing in that. It lightens my load every time I do share it. Again, I think sharing something is literally disseminating some of the weight it pushes on your shoulders. I feel lighter because I know I'm touching other women. I, again, receive messages. I don't want to say every single day, but I would say many a week, specifically mostly from young women who say, me too.
I think a lot of people think that if they didn't touch me, then it is not an abuse. I think the people need to understand that it is still a form of abuse, and it's really important to acknowledge that.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal, $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
How do you prepare yourself when you are getting ready to do an interview or to share your story? I know there are a lot of people out there who are survivors who want to start sharing their stories.
That's a really great question. In sharing my story, it all happened so fast. You mentioned it snowballed. Same for me. The moment I shared on the podcast and my book came out, that was only 3 years ago. But keep in mind, this year will be 17 years since my mom's murder. I took 14 years to do therapy. I also started my writing career. I wrote for Chicken Soup for the Soul. Chicken Soup for the Soul did not know about my mom's murder. I was writing about the impact she left on me. I was writing about the angel visits that she sent me or that she visited me with. I was writing about the cathartic pieces of it. And it took me so much time to get to the messy, dirty parts of it. And I think it took me a divorce as well to be able to do that authentically. I'm not saying that Everybody needs that time. I just think I knew I needed it without knowing it. I just listened to my gut and followed a trajectory, went along with opportunities that came from first quietly sharing it and then sharing it a little bit more and then a little bit more. I didn't really share a lot of it until I had to, and I felt I had to in order to receive justice. It's been a really layered thing because people will say, how did you prepare? How did you know you were ready? I guess I really didn't know. I just got thrown into it. And also I dipped my toes into it in ways too. My saying all of that is to highlight the fact that we are all individuals and we all do not have to share publicly. But if we feel that onus of responsibility or of sharing, I think it's important to also listen to our intuition about when, where, and how. If something doesn't feel right, I've learned to say, that was not a question I consent to. When I'm sharing my personal story, I actually prefer less preparation because I think that leads to more authentic conversations. But that's also coming from a point where I've shared so much. It's almost automatic to a certain degree. When I'm preparing for somebody else's interview, for my chance to speak to another survivor about their story, I will often prepare with as much knowledge as I can. But I tend to leave any statistical research for after the conversation. I just want to receive their stories. There's just really no uniform thing because I'm a single mom. So every time I step into an interview, it's a different day and a different dilemma beforehand. So there's no uniform preparation for me, unfortunately.
But that's important to hear, I think. People need to hear these things so that they can find out if this is something that they should do or not. What would you say to someone who is thinking about sharing their story?
I think it's really important to highlight that if you do choose to share your story, you can also choose to not share it at any point. If you're in the middle of an interview and it doesn't feel right, end it. If you have an interview slated and it doesn't feel right, cancel it. Consent is a huge thing. And in almost all facets of abuse that people have experienced, consent was taken from them to a certain degree. We control our narrative. Part of that consent and taking back that power is choosing what we share and what we don't share at times. So I do believe if you're going to share your story, I would very deeply encourage you to retain any amount of consent that you can. And in that consent, if you choose not to consent, you can do that. Also, when I speak to that, you choose what you share. If somebody is pressuring you to share something you don't want to or a facet about it, there's no way to know ahead of time what will rock me the next day or will leave me in an emotional hangover. But I try to listen to my intuition in the moment as much as possible. So I feel like I've honored myself through that process. Another suggestion for anyone who might want to share their story about survivorship, I highly suggest they go to somethingwaswrong.com/resources. We talk about it often, but that's a great place to start. And look for nonprofits that are related to the experience that you've had. Nonprofits are a really great start to put you in touch with a therapist. Maybe that's where you want to share first and maybe only. But they also can put you in touch with events that might be seeking speakers or organizations that have educational programs. There are lots of options, and nonprofits and organizations related to the experience you've had is a really great place to start. There is a deep catharsis in sharing, especially when you share with the right people. That's a professional that is trained to receive you in a healthy manner. Sometimes it's cathartic to share with prosecution or the criminal justice system if they're going to receive you in a validating way. It's also really cathartic because of those Me Too moments. When I share and I receive those messages that say, Me Too, I was abused by my brother or my sister, or Me Too, my mom was abused by my brother or my sister, I think they're so brave to reach out one-on-one and share with me. Because I'm doing it to a sea of people that I can't see their faces. I am doing it to anonymous people that I don't have to let in their opinions. I cannot look at social media if I want. So I can keep a boundary that they can't when they reach out one-on-one. I think it is immensely brave. Those messages are so cathartic to me. It is heartbreaking to hear Me Too, and to know that I am not alone, because it means that other people have felt the pain that I have too. The other side of the coin is the fact that it is healing to know that I am not alone. By naming something and calling it out, I am helping other people reach out one-on-one or to a therapist, to me, to a community, to a support group, to a podcast, to a book, and that there's healing coming from that. Not necessarily just for me, but for other people too. That is, by and large, the most cathartic thing.
You are amazing.
You are.
You're just incredible. And I love the positiveness and the love that you give out to people.
I don't share this often enough, but my name is Amy Beth. And my mom was really into names. I am too. Love a meaning of a name. My brother actually named me, ironically enough. Not many people know that. He named me when he was 3. And Amy, to my mom, meant love. In French, I believe it means beloved. And Beth in Hebrew means house. So my name means house of love, because my mom, I think, as a domestic violence survivor herself, not only by my brother, but my father too. My father was abusive. I think that her wish for me was just constant love, a state of curation of love. So you saying that means so much to me.
Perfect. I just want to thank you, because you really have had an impact in my life. Watching you and listening to you, your podcast and your book has really made my life open up. Every day, it's like a gift, and I want to thank you for that.
Thank you. Are you kidding me? You make me tear up. I don't have the words, but ditto.
Oh, good. And I hope our friendship can continue to grow.
Thank you. Absolutely. I actually daydream sometimes of a day when I can get every person I've interviewed for What Came Next in one physical space and hug them all. But you are the human I think of most often, I would say, probably because you've introduced me to 80% of the interviews. So whenever I'm talking to them, I automatically think of you. And also, you're just a connector. I speak to the light that you exude. People are drawn to it and drawn to you. You draw people together as a result. And I think it's so beautiful. You are a beautiful human. And I thank you for giving me the gift of your friendship. I'm thankful for the impact you've had on my life, on What Came Next, on the Broken Cycle Media community. I just deeply, deeply appreciate you now and always, not only for who you are, but for the impact you make.
Well, the feeling's mutual. I'm just so honored to share things and ideas, because every time I go away, 3 days from now, I'm going to have these ideas that pop in my head from our conversation. And it just keeps giving all the time.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
I would have never gone to the police precinct. If anything, maybe a hospital setting where they wouldn't be able to gain access. But even then, it's taking a gamble, because once they find out that you went against them, they would report it, and right away, they'd make my life miserable, whether it be tailgating me, going to my friends' houses. They carried weapons. They would do anything that would hurt me or hurt my family and friends. I was so scared that they can get me back in a lot of ways.
What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production, co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.